Welcome to Pixelated episode 105. I'm your host, Will Saddleberg. This week, we are back to your regularly scheduled programming as Damian Abner and I dive headfirst into the release of Android 17. From changes rolling out to everyone to some Pixel-specific upgrades, there is plenty to talk about. Plus, Pixel Screenshots drops its on-device AI restriction and Google's new home speaker finally goes up for pre-order. And is it easier than ever to switch to and from iOS? It's all coming up after this word from our sponsor, Bitwarden. This week's episode of Pixelated is sponsored by Bitwarden, the trusted open source solution for passkey, password, and secrets management. Bitwarden helps you create strong and unique credentials across all your accounts and devices, so you never have to reuse the same passwords everywhere. With end-to-end encryption and secure autofill, Bitwarden helps defend against phishing attacks and data breaches, while making logins easier across every device. If you're using Android or a Pixel device, Bitwarden really shines. It autofills passkeys and passwords across Chrome, other Android browsers, and native apps, so there's no more switching back and forth to copy and paste credentials. The Android app also supports dynamic colors with Material U, so the app UI and icon automatically match your wallpaper palette for a fully cohesive Android experience. Bitwarden is also a powerful alternative to Google Password Manager because it is fully open source, cross-platform, and designed so your vault follows you everywhere, not just on Android. You can autofill passkeys, passwords, cards, and identities across all your accounts, and even generate strong new credentials directly from the signup form without leaving the page. Trusted by over 15 million users and 80,000 businesses across 180 countries and 50-plus languages, Bitwarden remains committed to transparency and making secure password management accessible to everyone with a free plan for individuals. You can get started with a free individual Bitwarden plan by hitting the link in the show notes or by visiting bitwarden.com/9to5Mac. That's bitwarden.com/9to5Mac. Thank you to Bitwarden for sponsoring Pixelated.
Gentlemen, Android 17, it's available, it's ready. We even have a little bit of Wear OS 7 thrown in, which, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I missed that announcement. I don't know how. I think I was so deep into the phone side of things that the actual watch stuff missed me by. But I actually think this is a bigger update than a lot of people are giving it credit for. And I've kind of come to some conclusions I didn't expect ahead of time. I thought this was a bit more of a rudimentary update. There is a lot here that maybe might be nice quality of life additions, in my opinion.
Yeah, so in terms of the big visual update, which by that I mean more blur, that's coming in QPR1, so that's not the big thing to talk about right now. But I think the biggest visual thing that people will interact with is bubbles. We've of course had chat heads for years on Android, but now Google is introducing this new, well, modified paradigm where any app can be bubbled. You can turn it into a floating bubble that appears in the corner and yeah, works for up to 5 apps. What do we think about it?
I want to rebuke your chat heads thing a little bit, because we've had them, but when was the last time you saw them? Like, this feels like a reinvigoration of chat heads. Like, it felt like chat heads were everywhere in what, 2013 era.
I think if you use Facebook Messenger, I feel like it's still.
Did that still have it? Okay, well, I've been without a Facebook account for a good number of maybe half a decade now. So okay, I apologize, but getting back to chat heads and chat bubbles, I've had a bit of an epiphany this morning. Initially, I thought, this doesn't make sense, to me at least. I'm wondering how people will use them. But I've kind of thought about it and slept on it since the OTA has been rolling out for, 48 hours at this point. I feel like this is Google's take on multitasking in the most elegant way possible for them, for Google's opinion of multitasking in an elegant way that doesn't feel, how would I say it? If you have a foldable device like the Fold 7,
yeah,
and you can have up to 5 applications running at once on the screen in some sort of format. So 2 on one side, 2 on the other side, 1 floating window. If I'm being completely honest, that gets quite messy, even though it is useful as a power, if you're a power user. Again, I don't know how you're a power user on a mobile phone, but there are people who want that. That's absolutely fine. I feel like this overcomes some of those messy elements. Yeah. And it fits more in with Material 3 Expressive. So you have the chat bubble that can float around. You can dip in and out. You are multitasking. Whereas I feel like sometimes with split screen, it feels very, how would I say it, like enforced. You feel like you have to go into this split screen mode to get to do things. Whereas this is like more of a passive multitasking. I don't know how you guys feel about it. I kind of think I've done a 180 on this now in the last 24 hours.
Well, Google has been working on this for a long while. I'm not sure that's how public that is, but they've been working on that. I've seen this like active internally for like 2-3 years ago. But anyways, but multitasking, I agree. Well, that is Google's premise that it is multitasking too, but I think multitasking in the traditional sense, in the desktop sense, might be like multiple windows side by side. And on mobile, that's the best you can do is one on top of another. Foldables makes more sense. Two apps side by side. I think that's a more traditional definition of multitasking. And I guess Bubbles fit into that paradigm. But at the same time, I feel like it's still one app usage at the end of the day. And it's fine for easier access. It's not a thing to not disregard. But what apps do you think it makes sense to bubble?
I'd probably say messaging makes the most sense.
Mm.
It's the most obvious, isn't it? Anytime we see, in air quotes, multitasking, it's always messaging. And I wonder if it's like, I know that in Google's marketing and blog posts, it was like, showing it on the Pixel 10 Pro Fold with a YouTube video open, right, and then messages kind of floating around. Like, does that feel a bit on the nose? Like, oh, you want to send a message quickly? Here's a message for you. Like, it feels a little bit like, come on.
That is just chat heads.
Give us better examples. Yeah. I mean, that's what I mean. It's like, we've done chat heads again.
Yeah.
Cool, thanks.
So I think Gemini was an example they use. That's honestly another messaging app, basically.
Yeah.
The one I've been trying to do is music, music app. So my minor gripe about Bubbles is how swoopy it is. Like the open and close animation, it feels so exaggerated at times.
Yeah.
So I just end up putting it in the top right corner so that the bubble animation has less distance to travel on the screen. I guess I like having now play, it's open to the now playing screen. I guess I like that, even though I have like a home screen widget and like, of course, notifications. That's what I've been landing on right now. I have been trying it with Gemini, but I feel like it's not a big enough window, so to speak, since the app is slightly shrunk with the top and bottom borders. But I agree that it goes back to messaging, TBH. Maybe the fact that you can access like the main chat list of your messaging app, that's all, that'll make all the difference to people. But it's on the phone. It's just multitasking on the phone is frankly not a solved problem. And I don't know if it can even be solved just given the constraints of a ported screen. But yeah, it is too... Google's credit, I guess, I'd say this is a pretty sizable UX change to Android. I guess another thing I saw is people using Google Keep and note-taking, which, yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Do you know what? That sounds like a great idea, because when I go to the supermarket, the amount of times where I'm like... Yeah, keep the list right there and you can kind of check things off. Okay, that's going on my Google Keep list to do. I'm just going to set it now. I'm going to do it right now while we're talking. Google Keep is now a chat bubble that lives permanently on my home screen. Amazing.
I think this was like a necessary step for Google. I think this is like a good change for Android. But it is funny that this sort of the conversation that, you know, I've been kind of listening to you guys, but also thinking about is it sort of lands on this problem I have with multitasking on mobile in general, which is... Anytime I have a new option for trying out multitasking applications, right? Like any, you know, whether it's the first time I used a foldable or, you know, trying out OnePlus's open canvas stuff, both on the open and then later on their slab phones. Like you try it out and you look for the solution that this is going to like fill in your life, right? Like the problem yeah. this is going to fix. I mean, you guys are literally talking about it. And eventually, like the conclusion I come to is like, man, I just like the way I use my phone is just not really built around split screen multitasking in that way.
No,
like it's trying to find applications that fit it. I mean, I was thinking about it. It was like, you know, when was the last time I routinely used split screen apps on a non-foldable? And it was before I had before I drove a car with Android Auto. It was back when I had a phone mount in my car and would keep like maps and then like a media thing open and like a 75-25 split or something. We're talking a decade ago. Like I once that kind of went away and I had built in Android Auto, like that was sort of the last like real split screen thing. Again, on foldables, it's a little more frequent. I'll use it, but on a slab phone, I like having it there, but it's very infrequent that I actually need it.
So I think the smartphone itself, like the inception of the smartphone 2007 and forward, that really ushered in this concept of computing being a one app thing. And like even on desktop, we've seen that Apple post iPhone really embraced the idea of like opening full screen apps. Like I feel like there's a generation of people who their computing experience is whatever app they're using, they full screen, and then they just have multiple full screen apps open. And well, I think to more.
That's the other thing, actually, real quick, that I realized is that the timeline I'm talking about, when I stopped using split screen, sort of aligns with when every mobile device switches to a gesture based navigation system. And I also wonder if that's part of it, where it's so quick and easy to swap between two apps with just flicking your thumb, as opposed to mm-hmm. back in the three button day where you would have to, you know, it's only two or three taps, but that's yeah. more than just swipe, swipe, swipe. You know what I mean? Like that change made it easier to be like, well, I'll just keep, you know, yeah, I'm at the grocery store and I'm also texting with my fiance and I have my shopping list, but I can just, instead of having split screen and having to jumble between those, you know, jump back and forth between those experiences, I can just have full screen messages, full screen keep, and I'll just swipe back and forth as I need.
I do wonder how much, like you alluded to it before there, that this has kind of been in the works for so long. We kind of seen it in previous Android versions where there was like the groundwork was laid for this and it never really kind of like materialized until now. I wonder if this is just a little bit of like, we've been working on this for so long, we need to just ship this eventually. Mm. A little yeah. bit like how certain features happen.
Yeah, I know that Googlers were using it like 3 years ago or something, like actively wow. inside 2 or 3 years ago. But yeah, I think this is a not insignificant UX change to Android. I'm just very curious how most people will adopt it. So I think one thing I'm trying is I log water, so I'm have Google Health open and I kind of like the app icon, so that's a nice thing to have in the corner. But I feel like in the chat heads era, I used them when they were first out, but I stopped because I didn't like the clutter of like just a permanent thing floating on my screen. Maybe I'll try again this time, but yeah, bubbles. It's okay. It makes more sense on large screens is I think what way where you can land on.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I do hope that if anyone out there is listening who works on this project, can you please make the chat head bubbles work with the theming system theming, because it is a bit jarring to see a colorful icon there that you want it to be in that like themed icons.
How do you distinguish monochrome icons? I can't.
I mean, mine is so diverse on my home screen that I'm pretty sure it would take someone who either cannot read for a start because I still have app labels and I'm one of those old school guys.
But
they all look so different. They're pretty obvious. Well, I mean, that's another nice feature here in Android 17. There is a little bit more customization that I think is missing. I do think Google needs to go a bit further, and I hope that they do over time, but we're kind of getting there. We're kind of getting there towards Pixel Launcher being where it probably was, Android 10 era, where you could make all those changes that you wanted to, text, fonts, all that kind of stuff. I think overall, visually, if you're expecting major changes, there's a few tweaks here and there, nothing too drastic. It just makes everything kind of fit a little bit better with Material 3 Expressive. I like that they're making live updates a little bit more accessible with bigger buttons. It definitely feels like it's more towards the usability side of things and a little bit more cosmetic this time than actual full UI changes, bubbles notwithstanding.
Yeah, I'm... screen reactions is another thing Google was pushing. Mm-hmm. They're like framing, I think they framed this pixel, the feature drop, which I guess we can start talking about, as something for creators, which, interesting. That's yeah, a really a weird way big to do push. It. But yeah, the screen recorder on Pixel got a nice upgrade visually, and you can do screen reactions, which is responding to the culture. I'd give them that. But otherwise, this is a quiet pixel drop focused on feature expansions, international feature expansions. Then again, in fairness, like when there's a major Android release, the feature drop is pretty minor, especially in this context, in Google's new... they're having their phone launch in a few months. So it's the timing for this feature drop and the major Android release has never really made sense. So I guess it's par for the course in that regard.
I mean, I do think it makes sense. I don't know if you feel the same as me about Will. I'm sure you do. I think we talked about it on Sideload previously that it's kind of good that Google does hold some things back post, well, now anyway, with this new update timeline, post Pixel launch period, because I think it almost feels like throwing a bone to owners of previous devices that you will get another potentially big update with more functionality and more changes. And then obviously the person who gets pre-orders a new device, they get a shiny new version of Android for like maybe what, 2 or 3 weeks earlier than the public release based upon timelines of the last couple of years.
Yeah,
I kind of do think that make optically that's good. I don't know if people are going to be desperate to upgrade to the Pixel 11, knowing what we know now, but at least there is some kind of separation and like throwing a bone to those Pixel 10 and Pixel 9.
More so than previous years. This is a phone that looks the same for the third time. Like we all said last year, this is really leaning into the software, and that's probably a discussion for another day.
Yeah,
definitely. Overall, 40 changes, 40 or so actual notable changes. And go check out the deep dive that I did. I do one of these every single time we get a major update.
Yeah.
It isn't, as I say, as extensive as normal. It's about 7. It'll take 20 minutes of your time to sit through it all. But it definitely feels like, with regards to the Pixel drop was almost like, hey, here's a little bit extra. But I think one that came out of that I'm really intrigued about, and it ties back to App Bubbles, is they've added a gamepad for foldable devices. I wonder if, again, that's another way of like kind of throwing a bone for people who buy these foldable devices and potentially want a fully integrated experience. We've talked about Balatro here, and I mean, I'm an addict. I don't know if Will still is, but certain games don't work necessarily as well as they probably should on such a big screen. And having a gamepad can kind of alleviate some of the problems. It like gives you this experience that maybe should have been there from the very, very get-go.
Yeah, and okay, so this is, to be fair, this is not live yet. This is just part of the announcement. It's rolling out over the next few months. So if you have
it's the Android 17 announcement, technically. Yes. It's not the Pixel drop, which is weird.
Well, yeah, it's essentially building. So this is not, you know, this is not a completely fresh idea. You can find this on certain other foldable devices, but this... like so many features that we see come to Android releases these days, this is sort of taking an idea that some OEMs are doing and codifying it into the Android foldable experience, so that you can, like, once this is on all foldables, you will be able to have this like virtual gamepad. I you know, in my write-up on the news about this, I compared it to, and it's hard not to, I compared it to like emulation, right? Like I compare it, like that is the experience yeah, that this reminds me of the most is opening up a ROM that you legally acquired, that you legally ripped from a game you own, and playing it with virtual buttons, which is truly one of the first things I did on my on the first foldable I ever used was play my legally obtained copy of Pokemon Emerald on a Galaxy Z Fold 4. So yeah, I mean, they're saying it's going to be customizable. The UI, you know, we've seen an early glimpse of it. You know, virtual buttons are never preferable over physical buttons, obviously, but it's on a screen, you know, the size and shape of modern foldable devices, this 1:1 aspect ratio that is on, you know, at least for the time being, the majority of Android foldables, makes for a good, like, you know, just slap the controls on the bottom half of the screen. And although virtual, certainly offers like a much better gaming experience and also probably makes better use of that big screen than trying to condense a UI into a 1:1, you know, aspect ratio. This controller would not necessarily work or be necessary, I guess, for Balatro. But as an example, Balatro is, you know, a game that does not scale super well on those 1:1 screens. So I think it's a good change. It's good to have this coming to every Android foldable, especially ahead of Apple getting into this.
Yeah, definitely. I think as someone who has gamed on foldables before, and I was using the Pixel 10 Pro Fold until recently, where I've gone back to the Pixel 10 Pro, not having stuff kind of blocking the display and blocking the actual gameplay areas is it seems so obvious, but yeah. Lots of games end up having, and especially a lot of emulation, you end up having these on-screen controls that like really get in the way, and you're like, I can't see where I'm going, or the UI gets completely overblown over the game, and it's really irritating. So it's good to see Google finally looking at this and thinking, do you know what, we'll give a solution. So I agree with you that it's going to be interesting now when we start to see devices that are not 1:1, what 1:1 aspect ratio, how's it going to work with that? And yeah, that it's good to see. I'm kind of intrigued as well to see how all of these OEMs, so we talked about it previously, to kind of move on a little bit from Android, some of the Android 17 tweaks. We were thinking about how all the OEMs are going to integrate Android 17 into their devices. And like clockwork, we're seeing Honor give a glimpse of their Android 17 update. And it, I mean, let's be completely honest, it's a blatant ripoff of what's going on over on iOS 27 with Liquid Glass. I think it's really disappointing to see this, if I'm being completely honest. I don't know how you guys feel if you've even seen this, but yeah, to me, it's just not a good look, especially as, like I say, Google's laid this really nice framework for people to build upon and they're just throwing it out.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I don't have much fresh to say on it. It's just, it's somewhere between a spectrum of lazy and embarrassing. Like, I come up with your own take or just use, you know, the built-in Google/Android look. Like, it's just frustrating. Yeah. This isn't obviously for us necessarily, right? Like, you know, especially in North America, like this, you won't see this UI here, but it's, I don't know. It doesn't make Android look good, right? Like, it gives the impression that Android is this platform that is just a knockoff of another platform, which is obviously not true.
It doesn't need to be, though. This is a frustrating thing. It doesn't need to be, because Honor makes devices that are, at least now, obviously since they split from Huawei, they're making high quality hardware, like incredible foldable devices. The internals speak for themselves, the hardware speaks for itself, but the software is just like, oh my God, what are you doing, guys? It just feels, it feels like a kick in the face a little bit to Android as a platform, in my opinion. I agree.
Grab your phone and take a look at your app drawer right now. You've probably found yourself relying on these same old apps and services since the Nexus days, and what suited you best back then might not be the right choice in 2026. Luckily, Proton can help bring you into a privacy-first ecosystem built for our modern age. Proton offers practically every service you could possibly need under the sun across every platform, including email, calendar, file storage, password management, document editors, and of course, a trusted VPN.
Built with class-leading end-to-end encryption, Proton's entire suite is fast, intuitive, and secure. And export tools mean you don't need to worry about leaving data behind on those other apps. Pixelated listeners can save 30% off an annual subscription to Proton Unlimited, which includes 500 gigabytes of cloud storage, custom email domains, a dedicated customer support team, and so, so much more. It's what's best for your current phone, not whatever you were using back in 2013. Upgrade to Proton today and save 30% on your annual subscription by heading to proton.me/9to5Google or by clicking the link in the show notes. That's proton.me/9to5Google. Thanks to Proton for sponsoring Pixelated.
Let's get on to some other things here and there with regards to this massive, it is a massive week for Android in general. I alluded to it before, Wear OS 7 was something that I wasn't really tuned into, and I apologize for that because it's something that I love quite dearly. Mm. Tell me a little bit about Wear OS 7 and these updates.
Yeah.
Because Google didn't really get into it as much as they probably could, because there was a hell of a lot here, more than they let on.
Yeah, it's okay, just I guess the framing around it. It was announced at I.O., not an on-stage announcement or anything like that. It really should have deserved a proper announcement the week before at the Android show, but for whatever reason, it wasn't. So yeah, this is coming earlier than expected. I guess I think the usual thinking was that this would allow the first device to get Wear OS 7 would be the next Galaxy Watch. But no, it's actually the Pixel is going to get it. And Wear OS 7, based on Android 17, it is pretty similar to Wear OS 6.1. It is visually, the biggest change is that their tiles are now widgets, but on the Pixel, on the Pixel Watch, it is still something you swipe left to right on. On the Galaxy Watch, it's an up and down thing. It's a feed, right? The Galaxy Watch?
I think so, yeah. If I remember correctly, yeah. It's a little while since I used my Galaxy Watch 8 Classic, but I'm pretty sure they're inverted, which can be really frustrating if you do want to use a Galaxy Watch and make that switch. It doesn't feel universal, but that's by the by, I think.
I am curious whether the Pixel Watch ends up moving to that just to like conform for developers so that everybody's on the same page. But yeah, visually, everything's the same right now. I guess the second big update is live updates, where just like on your phone, it is now accessible on your watch. I think for everybody, Google Maps is probably the biggest thing, right?
Yeah, I will use Google Maps for this definitely a lot. I think it's one of those things that I love the fact that you can then lift your wrist and potentially have the live updates where you're not like kind of looking at it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know that's a really, really roundabout way of describing it.
So I guess the elephant in the room is that all of us have kind of stopped wearing a Pixel Watch, at least Damien and I. That banger post of the weekend. And yeah, same here. So previously, during the review period, I was wearing the Pixel Watch during the day. Then when I got off work, I just switch the Fitbit Air and continue into the weekend, etc. But now I am all Fitbit Air all the time, and the only time I put the Pixel Watch on is when I leave the house.
Yeah, I'm so curious to know what Google would think of you saying that. I guess that's probably the vision. Well, I don't know. That's probably a step further than the vision they saw for the Fitbit Air, to not just make it a supplemental addition to your Pixel Watch, but to replace it. I mean, you know, so that's good for them now, but does that make you, you know, in 2 or 3 years go, and Abner, you are, I mean, all three of us are probably an exception, but if we were all more regular users, this wasn't the job, would you go like, you know, I actually don't need to buy a new Pixel Watch. I haven't really been wearing it. I'll just stick with my Fitbit, my $99 Fitbit Air.
Yeah, I guess.
I feel like a lot of people aren't they? I think that's kind of where I came from, where like I've almost always had a a smartwatch on my wrist for the last few years. And what I'll do is I'll go through a phase where I'll have 2 or 3 months where I don't wear a wearable, and then I'll go back to wearing it 24/7 again. I think with this, with regard, obviously you brought up live updates. That's probably one of the biggest notable changes. That feels like a genuine quality of life addition to Wear OS 7 and to the Pixel Watch. But I wonder if there is a way that Google can kind of integrate that into a less visual element with Fitbit wearables. So you have vibration. You could have these. You could have these vibrations for live updates. I, my first thought was Uber. I haven't used Uber for a few weeks, but you get the live updates for Uber are fantastic because you kind of at least have an idea that, oh, my driver's going to arrive in 5 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever it is. You could definitely have vibrations on your wrist of Fitbit to indicate the driver's arrived and or is 5 minutes away. Like I do wonder how Wear OS is now going to truly, I mean, it definitely feels more like a bigger platform than it ever has. And these updates do make sense. But for us low techies who want a fitness wearable, why can't we see Google put a little bit of Wear OS 7 into these lower tech wearables? Do you think it's a battery thing?
I have thought about this since the Fitbit Air doesn't technically maintain a constant connection to your watch, to your phone.
Yeah.
So that's probably the issue there. But yeah, it's, so I guess that from an org structure standpoint, Fitbit and Pixel, different teams, I think maybe they've merged it, but from a product branding standpoint, at least, it's clear that at how it's being sold, it's, they're not the same. It's not the same brand, really.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I guess they could have called this Pixel Air. And but I think if they did that, it would be like, it's not running Android. So why is it called that? But yeah, it's the, I don't know. It's, I guess the reason why I made that switch to Fitbit Air all the time and the Pixel Watch as the companion thing. It's like my phone's always with me. That is the unfortunate fact. I'm always seeing the screen. I'm always checking the screen, especially for this job. So it's, the watch is just a double thing, which I really don't need. Like, to be honest, if I feel the buzz on my wrist, I'm probably just using it as a, as like a beeper to check my phone. And
yeah,
I don't know. The thing I do like about the watch is the timers, that like creating timers, stopwatches, etc. That's just something you can't replicate on the wrist, on the fit, something like the Fitbit Air standalone. But it's, I don't know, it's just that realization that you, most people are glued to their phone, honestly.
There are some changes here with Wear OS 7 that I feel like they are trying to stop people from getting glued to the phone. I do think there's some solid inclusions, like being able to finally choose your audio output, which to me seems actually insane that this is taking this long to do it.
Yeah, the amount of times where you're like, I would have loved media controls in Fitbit there.
Yeah, media controls would have been fantastic. But at the end of the day, I think all of this stuff seems like getting Wear OS in line with where it probably should have been 2 or 3 years ago when we first saw the Pixel Watch.
I just wanted to share a factoid that Google shared on their blog. More than half of Wear OS users wear their watch 7 days a week, and the most active wear it over 23 hours each day. So that's what, you basically just take it off when you shower. I don't get the people who shower with their watch. That's the thing, apparently. And I don't.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
I am a showerer with my Fitbit Air, for definite, because of the fabric.
But it's fabric.
It's fabric. It dries out pretty quickly. It's waterproof. Like, if I'm at the gym and it gets all sweaty, then when am I going to wash it? I'm not going to put it back on when it's filthy.
Okay. Like, fair.
Am I the crazy guy for that one? I don't know. What do you do, Will? Because are you using the silicon band still, the horrible one? Or are you?
I only use the silicon band when I run.
You take the time. You take the time to take it out of its strap and then put it in the silicon one and then change it.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm too far.
I do
too
that
lazy
with
to
I do that with every watch. If I have a non, you know, if I have a whether it's
non-silicon
fabric or metal or whatever. Yeah, yeah. I will, no matter what watch I'm wearing, I will switch bands. If I'm wearing a non like athletic band, because I don't want to get a cloth band, a fabric band, especially sweaty because it will typically stain and it's harder to clean. The silicone band, I usually just like, I will, when I switch back, I take the band that now no longer has the gadget in it and I rinse it in the sink. That's usually what I do.
Oh God, I feel, am I a heathen? For
I don't know. This is just the thing that I've adapted to. I don't think there's a right way or a wrong way necessarily. Well, there's probably a wrong way.
Yeah, there probably is. You probably I would suggest that people, if you do have a Fitbit Air and you have a fabric band, probably don't put it in the washing machine. Don't put it through your like regular laundry, sauce, detergent. I was going to call it laundry sauce. You can have that one on me, laundry sauce. I wouldn't suggest doing that. But overall, I think, yeah, it's kind of strange having, I think a few of us have made the switch away from the Pixel Watch recently in favor of the Fitbit Air. So maybe these Wear OS changes, which I would have want, I have wanted for a while, don't hit as hard as they probably could have done, even though it's nice quality of life additions.
And I guess the other thing is the fact that, so the update as it is right now, there's some design changes, more material tweaks here and there. But I would say that the second half of the Wear OS update is Gemini Intelligence, which hasn't launched yet, but they'll bring stuff like the Create My Widgets thing. Gemini will get a visual upgrade. So that's all coming after this. And hopefully in the summer, that's what is probably going to launch on the Galaxy Watch first. And if Wear OS 7 is already out there, it probably follows very shortly for the Pixel Watch.
I think that'll be the one that everybody's looking forward to, Gemini Intelligence. And obviously, I wonder if that will tie in. I mean, Google hasn't, they've said summer, haven't they, for phones? So I wonder if it's a big across the board launch, Wear OS 7,
it's, Android 17. It's new. Yeah, Gemini Intelligence, touch it on phone, to touch briefly on phones. It's like Android 17, I think, that Gemini Intelligence will be the bigger part of that story, but I don't know how much existing phones are going to get, but I do feel like the biggest story is that for summer fall launches, Samsung's upcoming foldables and the Pixel 11, that's going to be the story of it, the Gemini Intelligence, and that'll be an interesting thing to track, of course.
And I'm guessing based upon previous timelines and whatnot, it feels like there might be a crossover there anyway. So it's kind of like almost perfectly timed for this, in air quotes, summer launch period. One final thing on Android 17. We heard from Google that they've improved the copy. Is it the switch to Android or switch to Pixel application?
Switch, I'm not sure what it's actually called. It's Android Switch.
Yeah, Android Switch. Sorry, yeah. This tool has been improved that basically, it's going to be better at pulling all that data from your iPhone, which I think is always a good sign. I do wonder how many people are making that switch. It doesn't look like anyone's really doing that en masse the way that maybe Google would have hoped, but it is great that there is an element of, we are not just making our OS, we're making it so that if anybody wants to make a switch to this OS, especially with Pixel 11 in the not too distant horizon, it's going to be nice for people to switch and have better migration of like their, I think they've said MMS, SMS, RCS, full iMessage history with all iMessage. Everything. Yeah, every single thing is going to be transferred. I will be hoping to try this out with one of my older iPhones and see if it works and how well it does. But yeah, you can do this with completely wirelessly now. Yeah. I know they announced some tools last year and it improved the experience, and this is another one on top of that. So I just think it's great to see Google thinking about that. I don't think Apple would ever think about that for Android, but it's great to see Google thinking.
They have. It's the EU thing.
Yeah, it's easier both ways now. In fact, I would love if anybody out there, I would love to know if somebody like routinely switches back and forth, because it is easier than it, like, well, I wouldn't even say easier than ever. I would say it's more possible than ever. Like it is not like, it used to be that if you were going to switch between these two platforms, you were kind of just sacrificing a lot of your data to jump back and forth, which made, I would assume, I mean, I don't know anybody who's ever jumped back and forth between iOS and Android on a regular basis without just having two copies of their data existing.
Yeah.
But if you, like, that is kind of possible now. So if you are that person, email me at will@9to5mac.com. Google.com, because I would love to know. I would love to talk to you.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a fascinating thing you can kind of do now.
I mean, the list is pretty darn extensive. I think it's really, really good that it's not just the SMS. I think a lot of people would be the messaging history that's major. And I know that I use WhatsApp anyway, so it's kind of siloed away in Google Drive.
Yeah. But
I think that you can get all of your passwords, passkeys, Wi-Fi credentials, all of your alarms and accessibility settings. Like, those alone are like pretty huge, considering I'm guessing a lot of people would have just, I'm just going to start from fresh. Like, I'm moving over to a new platform. You know, everything is going to be starting from
fresh. I kind of think people want to bring over their wallpaper, their app layouts, which I think it's almost a disservice if you keep the app layout like on iOS, you miss the opportunity for widgets and stuff like that.
Maybe.
Well, you have widgets on iOS now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like in theory.
Well, Damon, you do this. It's a four. You use the four wide app grid on Pixel, which
I like do. IOS, yeah, yeah.
I do as well. Minus four wide.
Oh my God.
So
I don't have enough apps to put on my home screen. I use 12 apps these days.
Yeah, same. I think I have 12 and then two massive widgets at the top.
Yeah.
So for me, the transition would be very, very easy.
My home screen is filled with, I have like, it's every spot is filled. There's no free spot between widgets and apps. It is, and the multiple folders. Yeah, I use every inch.
I keep it simple. I'm old school. I want to be able to search. I want my phone to be completely under my control.
I want to be that person that they can just open search to find apps, but no, everything's on my home screen. I spill over onto a second actively used home screen.
What's the point in an app drawer then? In that case, I
never use the app drawer. It's everything.
Okay, so we need to start a petition for you, Abner, to use the app. Delete all but about 8 apps on your home screen, and do a week of app drawer usage. I think you'll feel free. You'll like it.
Abner says that, you know, you got to take more advantage of the flexibility that the Android home screen gives you. Abner, sounds a little bit like your home screen is very iOS-y if you're not using that app drawer.
I have the least flexible layouts. I have fun layouts, my widgets.
I know, like hey, you can move stuff on iOS now. It sucks. It's somehow they made it.
It is so rigid. It is so rigid.
How did they screw that up? I don't anytime I pick up an iOS device and I try to move an application icon, it goes haywire immediately. Like, why did you screw this up? Like,
we can complain about that and we can jest, but I do think Pixel, there is a way to go for home screen organization. I do think there's some Android OEMs out there that are doing better, i.e. being able to kind of like multi-select apps, delete from your home screen and all that kind of stuff. I think we should definitely need that. So if anybody's out there who works on the Android team, I hope there is somebody out there listening to this, please make that a priority for the next version. We'd definitely like to see a bit more customization, but it is good to see that we're getting this really transitional application for iOS to Android being a lot more robust and having a lot more available options. I think that's always very, very good to see. But let's take a look at something else that I think is part of the Pixel application system. We've seen Pixel screenshots, which I'll go to bat for Pixel screenshots. I use every single day because I'm such a really klepto with my screenshots. This has now kind of goes against the idea of it.
Yes. So when it was announced with the Pixel 9, the big story there was that it's on device thanks to Tensor on the G4 and then the G5. But they are rolling out. This was not announced in any way. It was not part of the Pixel drop or anything like that. But they're rolling out the latest app update, and the settings now says that it can also use a cloud AI. Which is their private AI compute or whatever it's called, Apple or something similar. It's basically where you get a secure computing platform on the cloud to process your screenshots just like it is on device. They've started doing they last year in November, they did it in Magic Queue, and they also use it for the recorder app for transcriptions in other languages. But now they're bringing it to Pixel screenshots. not a lot of details on what improvements it brings, but yeah, it is moving away from the on-device messaging, and some people are quite up in arms about it.
Do you care about this?
I'm using a 10A, so I don't really use it.
Okay, that was that. I should have expected that. He's an A series guy. I don't know. I think I'm in two minds about it, because I do think it does kind of like devalue what Tensor is all about if we're going to have these on-device AI processing and they're offloading it to the cloud. But like, does it matter that much if you get better results and better processing? I don't know.
The processing is the promise of it. And I've said that I don't think on-device AI is meaningfully powerful yet in terms of the features you get. We'll see how Apple does with iOS 27, which they're a lot of on-device stuff, but I still think the vast majority of things is cloud-based, and that's how you get the best AI experience.
I'll speak on behalf of, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but of the Reddit community, because that is where I have seen the most backlash towards this. I'm of two minds, I suppose. It's one mind, two thoughts. The first one is as you alluded to, Damien, what is the strength? Okay, so like, yes, this will probably improve screenshots. Like, not guaranteed, but if they're making this change, they clearly see that there is some level of improvement they can offer to this app that they can't do on an exclusively on-device offering. But that, like, continue, you know, especially this being the second like big Pixel exclusive feature to move away from on-device AI, it does, I think it is fair with all of the other controversy surrounding Tensor to be like, okay, well, if the promise of Tensor is that it is specifically good at these AI tasks that Google wants you to associate with the Pixel, then also you're moving a lot of them to not like cloud-based AI, at least in some form. Why am I like, what is the advantage to Tensor? Like, outside of Google just having more control over the chip. But like, you know, we have hit the point really where it's like, if this is what we're doing, then I don't see a reason for Google to not jump back to Qualcomm outside of benefiting Google's own bottom line. But that comes at the cost of, you know, in my opinion, in the opinion of many others, like, it is not as good. Like, I have no problem with the last couple Tensor chips, but I'm not going to pretend like the most recent Snapdragon chips don't run circles around them in terms of raw benchmarks, and people do care about that. So I get the frustration there. The second thing, and I guess I didn't really think about this until something you said, Abner, but like, I do think, you know, Google does, if they're going to make these changes to on-device AI applications or applications using on-device AI, they need to make it an announcement. I don't like that this is just kind of rolling out with like a settings change that like changes some of the language on the toggle.
There's probably a prompt. Like, once it's fully rolled out,
I hope so. But
do get a prompt.
Yeah, I hope so. It's just like, if you're going to make a big deal about how the benefits of on-device AI in terms of privacy, when you roll that back, I don't like that it's just like, at least in its current update, is mostly just like a change to the description in settings that you've already toggled on when you thought it was on device AI. So I don't know. Like, I don't particularly have a problem with this personally, but I can see some of the reasons people would be frustrated. And I do think Google, if they're going to they need to handle this a little bit better, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think maybe you have convinced me a little bit there. I can definitely see why. I don't know if you guys, even use it. I'm a big advocate.
I didn't think it was very good, to be honest with you, which is why I'm like not super bothered by it. Because if they improve it.
I really love it for like access codes, like my gym access codes and things like that. I'm so bad at remembering them that I kind of leave the screenshots, have them categorized.
Yeah.
And for the past couple of years, it's been, this is a confusing thing to me, is for screenshots, like it's using OCR and then on device AI model, which is clearly very lightweight. It's just pulling in all that information and working out what it's saying and kind of like doing it like that. And
I think you search for it, is natural search for it.
Yeah, you can use natural search. Like, that to me has been working fine for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I can think that this is potentially going to be done for on-device, sorry, cloud-based AI, is if it's going to come to less competent phones, like let's think Pixel A series. That's the only thing that I can think. Because what realistic, unless they haven't done that with Magic Q, right?
Magic, last year's Magic Q announcement, they just had more timely updates, but I don't really think we've seen the benefits. I haven't seen any surge in reports of Magic Q being a bit more useful.
Yeah. I wonder if this ties into the big personal intelligence play, i.e. you can utilize it for that. But if you don't, if you're like me, I don't really, there's a lot of folders on my Google Photos that I don't sync. Mm-hmm. So like,
yeah, most I don't people want, don't want screenshots in their library.
No, oh, that's it. Okay, like, but, I like that it's a separate application.
This is a solved issue in my opinion, because so I do upload all my screenshots to Google Photos in large part because it
you're a madman.
It is. Well, you guys know that you can just auto-archive them after 30 days. It's a toggle.
I do that
like
too.
This is a solved problem. Like this is my issue. I don't get a lot of like if I solely lived on Pixel, right? If I didn't have this job and I bought one phone every 3 to 4 years and it was a Pixel, and you know, maybe I would use screenshots a little bit more. But the fact that it is only on this, you know. It's not even on every pixel, like, right?
And yeah, so
like,
true.
Like to look at this and be like, oh, I'm going to like learn to rely on screenshots. First of all, I have a little bit learned my lesson on Google applications. If they're ever like semi duplicate applications, right? Like look at video and messaging apps and all this, right? Like there's a really strong chance Pixel screenshots sits down in like 2 to 3 years and they just point you to Google Photos. Secondly, like, If I just upload screenshots to Photos and then have them set to auto archive after 30 days, I can still search them easier than I on any device, including my web browser right in front of me right now, than I can on my phone. So that's my issue with screenshots, is that it isn't better than Photos for this, outside of like technically giving me the option to declutter my library, but in a way that comes with more downsides than it's worth.
And yeah, Samsung Gallery, they added a screenshots tab earlier this year, right? I think that was a very good idea.
Yeah, they did. They did. I didn't come here for this logic. So I want to use my application to have it processed locally, and I don't want it in the cloud.
It's not like, even doing that fine. Anymore.
Being cynical about it, I wonder if this is a play to kind of sell AI subscriptions a little bit.
No,
it's some long-term play.
I don't think that's, you don't pay for the processing. It's on a spot. It's free to users, and I don't think they can sell it.
Yeah, but right now it's free. Right now it's free. Like if people are not willing, if I'm sure there is a, I feel that there definitely is a big split of people who are willing to pay. And I mean, obviously I pay for Google One storage, so it kind of comes bundled in that anyway. So I'm kind of I'm straddling both sides, but I don't think I would pay for a lot of the extra AI features as much. But yeah, we'll find out hopefully soon what this means. I do agree with you, Will, that there probably just needs to be some better messaging around it, because for some people, I think because it feels like there's no messaging, we're kind of like anything. I mean, we are the biggest assumers in general about lots of things, and that's kind of our job to do so. But it definitely feels like there's a lot of assumptions being thrown around, and we will never really truly know until Google comes out and tells us why they're doing this.
If they do,
they didn't do it well at Magic Q. Just timely updates. What does that mean?
Yeah. Again, I mean, Magic Q feels a bit different in that it will work better with certain applications, but this one just feels like it's been working fine for 2 years. Why is it sudden change? Like, I wonder why that is. I don't know.
I also think it means we should, you know, as we alluded to earlier, we're coming up on the launch of the Pixel 11 series. Like, anything Google talks about at that launch event that involves on-device AI, you should at least, I think we've earned the right to be a little skeptical of, because... Okay, it's on device at launch. Is it going to be on device in 12 months? You've done this twice. So I would be skeptical going into this launch.
I mean, even if they said it was a chipset longevity situation, like I could potentially swallow that. But like I say, it's been two years of this application working, 2 years of me loving this application, and I will still continue to love using it.
I mean, what's going to get better from this, right? Like, it's that's the easiest way to come out and just be like, look, like, you know, we thought we could do this with on device, but we've been testing it. And it turns out if we do it with if we do it through this route, we keep, basically the privacy you want, but it does this, this, and this better, but they're not doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big component of things. I want to end on one kind of sad note. I'm sorry to bring this to everyone's attention, but with the launch of the Google Home speaker, it looks as though Google has now finally, and I am surprised at this, if this was genuinely true, that's it. No more manufacturing of Nest Mini and Nest Audio hardware, even though they've been out of stock on website for a long, long time. I wonder if they were going to third-party retailers or were regional specific. I will pour one out for the Nest Mini. Probably one of my most used Google products. It's been in my kitchen for how long? When did the Nest Mini come out? 2018? 2017? I don't even know at this point. Yeah. It's just been a fixture in my life. So yeah, if you are hoping to pick up a Nest Mini or a Nest Audio, I would expect prices suddenly to skyrocket as they become a bit of a collector's item, as it were. So yeah, bit of a sad news. We will have more news of the Google Home speaker. It is now available for pre-order. When do those, if you can just remind me.
25th.
Abner, when do the pre-orders? 25th. So hopefully in the next few weeks, we'll have reviews and comparisons and content for you around that. I'm very excited for this product because it's a follow-up to probably, like I say, one of my most used pieces of hardware after the Chromecast, which is, again, another legendary product that Google released and has cut from our lives. Yeah, it just is what it is. I think that's technology that hangs around for a long time, hurts the most, I think, when it gets ripped away from you. I don't know if you guys had anything to add. I guess download Android 17 if you haven't already. Enjoy the update. We'll have more coverage as the Android 17 QPR1 beta, which technically is still continuing. Looks like it's kind of winding down, but yeah, there's going to be more Android 17 in the coming months, hopefully post Pixel 11 launch. We are very fast approaching an already busy time. It is going to get even busier as the summer progresses and it gets even hotter. So yeah, stay cool, stay frosty, and get Android 17 downloaded, and I will speak to you very soon.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Pixelated, a 9-to-5 Google podcast. If you enjoyed the show, we ask that you rate and review it on the podcast platform of your choice and help spread the word by sharing the show with friends or on social media.